So the U.S. has driven these three critically important centers of resistance to the unipolar hegemonic world order together and turned them into a de facto alliance. And the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the SCO, has gotten stronger and stronger. And interestingly, this whole proxy war on Iran that we're seeing now developed. It actually began the day after Iran joined the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Obviously, that is not a coincidence.
Very well. We're going to leave it there. Thank you very much. Kevin Barrett there, editor at Veterans Today from Madison. Thank you for your contribution. Marcus Papadopoulos, historian, political analyst, and author from London. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. For Mikhail Vitavoy and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم, sisters and brothers. Welcome to a new episode of For a Better Life. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Asma at your service with a new topic to ponder upon. They say everything we hear is an opinion, not a fact, and everything we see is a perspective, not a truth. I actually coded this to tell you that all I say and hear are just my opinions and perspectives. I don't intend to teach, and it's all about some moments of thinking that we go through it together in order to actually step forward toward a better life. That is everyone's goal. Well, ever since we were children, it was a common thing to hear the elders say, "Trust me, I know by experience. Trust me, I have been there and I have done that." And this was usually an introduction to a perfect lecture we all hated to hear, because when we are younger, we did not want anyone telling us about the taste of things. We rather wanted to taste it ourselves. To hear about a special stuff is one thing, and to have it yourself is entirely another thing. This is the nature of youth, which is fearless, reckless, and sometimes blind, and maybe even deaf. And it's beautiful, you know, because it's unpredictably brave. And as I just told you, it's the nature of our young age. And we all have experienced it. So we know actually what we're talking about right now. But the truth is, it's not always about a ticket to a strange city with no one on your side, not about getting indulged in pleasures, running or chasing after your dreams or things like that. I mean, it's not always just like going into a candy bar and wishing to buy all the chocolates. It's not just like that. sometimes it is very tough and the situation gets really, really complicated. Sometimes when things are complicated, it is about our future, our life and destiny, everything that is going to actually distinguish us from another person is the decision that we make. So whatever that we do in our young age, whatever that we go through and we feel like we don't like to have it from other people's tongue, sometimes is going to be very much costly, and it's going to cost us so much of a price, and we will never forget it. In the crossroads of life, you have to choose, and sometimes you're not that mature, that knowledgeable, and that wise or experienced to make a perfect choice. Therefore, you need someone to counsel you, to give you some hints about the trodden roads, roads many have passed and you don't have to go through. Yes, we sometimes need to ask others about their experiences. Now, keep it right here and think about it. But before that, we will go for a break. And after that, we will see the rest of the topic. Thank you for being with us.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to For a Better Life. We're talking about making use of other people's experience, which might sound so tough for some of us because it means listening to a long list of must do and must not, which certainly is a bit of hard depending on the actually person who's counseling you. Sometimes experience comes from other people's advice. Some other times it has been achieved by ourselves. And these experiences are important as well because sometimes we fall into the same traps. As they say, once bitten, twice shy. That is the condition with many of us in many cases. And regarding many mistakes that we do. Imam Ali alayhi salam says, days of our life teach us experiences. Experience teaches man ethics and how to select the right path and how to take lessons. A raw man is gullible. Also, he says, learn lessons from the past events because events will similarly occur once again. That's why there are too many stories in the Holy Book of Quran through the account of different people mentioned there. We get to learn lessons actually through these histories that we read in the Holy Book of Quran. Allah orders the Prophet in the Holy Book and says, therefore, relate the narratives that they may reflect. After all, we never get to leave for centuries, so we could not go for too many mistakes. We have to study, to learn, to take lessons and practice them. As we just talked about up until now, experiences are very much of important matters that would help us like a candle that is all the time burning in your way and helping you find and see everything clearly. Well, sometimes it is very difficult. We talked about it already. Sometimes the people that are counseling you actually do not know the techniques, the methods to convey their meanings. They are not that patient to actually tell us things with a language that might be more suitable for the people who are of a younger age. And they need actually a sort of a specific language. And it might even happen to us. You know, today you are in the place of a person who's getting the advice, and some years later you're going to be in the place of the person who's going to give those advices. So we all know how the situation works. It might sound very I don't know how to put it, not very much cool, not very much easy to go for other people, to ask them for more of information, for more of experiences they have done in their life. But the outcome of it is going to be so peachy and so fruitful, because at the end of the day, it's more like you are reading a book and living the life of other people without even spending any time. I mean, without getting older, you are having the experience of a person who has already been there. So do not underestimate the power of the knowledge and of the experiences you might get from the people around you, because all these experiences are going to matter. Trust me, no matter how small these tiny little facts are, but they are going to add to you, and they're going to help you find the true road in order to get to the purpose you actually need to get there. And as I just told you, destiny is at work as well. So you cannot just waste your chances. You cannot just go through different roads haphazardly without knowing what is going to wait for you on the next step, on the next turning point. So I'm trying to tell you, do not underestimate the power of other people's experience, and of course of your experiences, because there are some chances in our life in which we do the same mistakes. It sounds so stupid, but we actually sometimes in our life happen to be the stupid person who goes for the wrong things again and again and again. And I told you, it's going to be so costly. We're going to pay a price that is not going to be forgotten from our mind. But that is the thing that happens sometimes. So the best thing is to predict it, to escape it, and to ignore all the traps that we once have been there. So this is all the time that we got for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. I leave you to God's never-sleeping eyes. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
EU Home Affairs ministers held an emergency meeting on Friday to discuss ways to address a growing refugee crisis. 281,000 people entered the EU seeking asylum in the 12 months to October this year, a 77% increase on the previous 12 months. But the ministers' meeting didn't appear to offer much hope.
We need to protect our external borders, and we need to return those who do not qualify for asylum and to be under the legal umbrella of the European Union.
Rights groups say this approach is scandalous, considering the EU was able to take in 4.3 million Ukrainian refugees within a few months. Regarding refugees coming from the Middle East and Africa, some member states are furious that other EU countries won't help with the numbers.
Unfortunately, the voluntary mechanism will only relocate less than 1% of total arrivals to the European, to the Med 5 countries this year.
One aid worker has told us he witnessed awful conditions for refugees on the Greek-Macedonian border.
I spoke to pregnant women who were sleeping on the floor. I spoke to Syrian young man who was trying to get to Europe to find protection with his disabled brother. Thinking of these people and what is being currently discussed, it's actually scary.
2,000 refugees died in the Mediterranean Sea this year as they tried to reach the EU. The bloc is paying billions of euro to countries like Turkey and Libya to prevent asylum seekers from coming here. Earlier this week in the European Parliament, the EU's broken asylum policy was castigated.
For the EU, all refugees except from Ukraine are illegal migrants, and yet most of them come from Afghanistan and Syria, countries that are victims of imperialist interventions and wars that the West caused.
It was suggested in the Parliament that EU authorities are racist, that Ukrainian refugees are welcome simply because of their skin colour. Rights groups are also condemning the racism and are asking EU leaders to remember the bloc's values they talk so much about. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
...150 universities are involved in 3 days of industrial action, affecting up to 2.5 million students. Action these students support.
If they're not paid properly, they can't teach properly, and therefore we can't learn properly, and then we're not getting what we're paying for in the first place.
Teaching conditions are learning conditions, and as long as our teachers aren't paid well, they can't teach well.
We think it's really important that teachers get a fair pay, and it's important for our learning conditions as well, so we stand in solidarity with our teachers.
The list of grievances is long. Trade unions say staff pay and pensions have declined by 25 and 35% respectively since 2009, in real terms, while workloads have increased. Lecturers earn an average of $55,000 a year. Academics are increasingly being offered short-term contracts, meaning many have to reapply for their jobs every few months.
People who are having to work more than one job in order to stay alive because the jobs that they get are casualized, their contracts are not secured, and the salaries they get for each job they do isn't sufficient to keep them alive. We've had stories up and down the country of people who, for example, have to live in a tent because they can't afford to pay the rent on a lecturer's salary because they're casualized.
You can't plan where you're going to live, you can't plan having a family. You never know exactly how long you're going to be employed, so you can't plan anything.
The average undergraduate degree costs around $35,000 in tuition fees. That's excluding books, travel, and accommodation. Students from outside the UK pay double or more.
If you're a teacher, one of your tasks is to steer your pupils into a job, to tell them that at the end of the day, education pays off, that it has societal value. But the reality is that some of the brightest minds in Britain are struggling to make a living.
Compare that with the average vice chancellor's pay, which is 6.5 times greater than the average staff member's. This is the latest in a wave of escalating industrial action taking place across the UK. Workers in several other sectors, such as the postal service, transportation, and health, also walking out for similar reasons. Negotiations between university staff and management are ongoing. Meanwhile, frustration among academics is growing that universities are putting profit before people. Saeed Purizap, London.
A recent Afghanistan welfare monitoring survey by the World Bank is sounding the alarm bell about the devastating living conditions of Afghan people. People are struggling to put food on the table while lacking access to many other simple necessities. Almost half the population has reported a constant decrease in monthly earnings.
We are facing many difficulties, especially in recent weeks. We slid into a bad recession. I work from dawn to dark, selling potatoes and onions, but so far I haven't even made a penny to buy some loaves of bread for my 6 children. Our house is cold and I have not bought fuel. I am concerned about the health of my children.
The survey has also found a rise in unemployment rates across the country. More and more Afghans are finding it difficult to land a job. The situation is only expected to get worse during the coming winter months. World Bank officials have called on Taliban rulers to take action on improving the living conditions of Afghan people. The Taliban says it does have plans, but needs access to the Afghan assets frozen by Washington in order to make them work.
With regards to addressing people's livelihoods and poverty, I confess there have been problems, and the major reason for the economic crisis and deprivation of Afghans is that their assets are crucially frozen. Furthermore, Afghanistan is practically sanctioned. Those who were defeated in Afghanistan use sanctions as tools for advancing their foreign diplomacy, but we are trying to neutralize the effects of sanctions and move Afghanistan to gradually become stable and self-sufficient.
The U.S. withdrew its forces from Afghanistan in 2021, but that has not stopped American politicians from asserting pressure on Afghan people. The war-torn country has not yet got the chance to repair the damage caused by more than two decades of Western aggression. As the winter comes closer, more and more Afghans are struggling. People here believe urgent support from the international community can be a lifeline for millions. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The EU is currently paying more for gas than any other region in the world. The European Commission had proposed to cap natural gas prices at €275 per megawatt hour. The idea was totally rubbished by the bloc's energy ministers at a meeting on Thursday.
A ceiling between €150 and €200 is a realistic ceiling, and this could help us reduce gas prices and therefore reduce electricity prices.
But any sort of a cap could result in gas suppliers moving their tankers to other parts of the world where there is no cap, like Asia.
If we really see that this mechanism is designed in the way that that we will lose LNG cargoes to other international markets, then we can suspend it.
As things stand in the EU, there is no guarantee of a manageable gas price or even a gas supply for 2023.
If we cannot keep our economy running, we will not be able to support Ukraine, and we must do everything to avoid such scenario.
Those representing small to medium-sized businesses are looking for EU support amid high inflation and growing interest rates.
If we not want to fight unemployment and a youth unemployment, we need to take care about the growth and competitiveness of European SMEs.
A debate in the European Parliament this week on promoting stability in the Middle East heard that the initiative would help ensure energy security for the EU. However, one lawmaker raised the West's previous actions in the region.
Leaving broken countries, hobbled economies, violence, trauma and permanent conflict. And at the end of that, we stroke our chins, pretend we've nothing to do about it and ask how we are going to promote stability in the region. You have got to be joking.
EU energy ministers will meet again on the 13th of December to try and reach agreement on the vital question of 2023 gas supplies. Analysts say this crisis best illustrates how sanctions against Russia have backfired. Jerome Hughes, Brussels. The recent decision by Italy to close its ports to the Ocean Viking vessel carrying 234 refugees has been slated in the European Parliament. The vessel, operated by a charity, was eventually allowed to dock in France.
How cynical is it that NGOs filling this gap and saving lives are criminalized, whereas the states violating their obligation enjoy impunity?
Asylum applications have increased by 60% in the EU during the past 12 months. That figure is separate from those arriving from Ukraine. In fact, the 27 EU nations are providing maximum support to Ukrainians, while those from other countries are often forced to sleep on the streets.
How dare so many of you define yourself as Christians and repeat that you are defending Christian values when your ideas and your actions are proof of the opposite?
In the Mediterranean alone, 2,000 refugees have drowned so far this year, according to the International Organization for Migration. The message seems to be, if you're not one of the 4 million Ukrainians who have arrived in the EU in recent months, you're not welcome. It's suggested war hawks in the US and NATO don't give a damn about the millions of people who have been displaced through military intervention in countries such as Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Yemen, and Libya. Apparently, the far right is flourishing in the EU due to the bloc's neglect of refugees.
How did Lega get big? How did the AfD get big? How did Marine Le Pen get big. It's all by capitalizing on the fears of migration.
The ascent of the extreme right in the EU is certainly bad news for asylum seekers, according to analysts.
What this is doing is this is leading to a rise in xenophobia. These refugees, these people who, as I said, are at the lowest possible ebb, are now being subject to abuse and to hate crimes.
EU Home Affairs ministers will hold an emergency meeting on the refugee crisis this Friday. There's a great deal of scepticism that anything will be achieved. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Deal or no deal? While the EU is still reluctant to lay its negotiating cards on the table, at a press conference in the capital, Tehran, Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian stressed that Iran's negotiating team is ready for the next round of talks and is waiting for the bloc's foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell, to set a date for ministerial-level negotiations.
We have made our stance clear, and in the previous negotiations, we communicated our views regarding the remaining issues. Last week, we announced that we are ready for the next round of talks, and now Mr. Borrell is following up and trying to set a date. Obviously, talk will continue if we make sure that our logical demands are met.
In the words of Hossein Amir Abdollahian, resolving the remaining issues with the IAEA, receiving guarantees on the economic benefits of the deal for Iran, and removing unilateral sanctions are the three key issues that need to be worked out.
The JCPOA revival talks are high on the agenda, and we are adamantly following up on the issue. Of course, this will happen when we make sure that our reasonable demands in line with our national interests are met.
According to the top diplomat, Iran and the U.S. continue to exchange messages. However, American officials take what Amir Abdollahian calls a hypocritical stance while talking to mainstream media by making comments that contradict the messages that they send to Iran.
The International Atomic Energy Agency has always deviated from its technical path and taken a political stance. European and American negotiators had promised that this would not happen again, but they broke their promise yet another time.
These comments come after a recent anti-Iran resolution passed by the IAEA Board of Governors prompted the Islamic Republic to announce that it will begin 60% uranium enrichment in its Fordo nuclear facility. Over the past couple of years, Iran has demonstrated in practice that it is committed to the JCPOA, or the nuclear deal. It has always been the other side that has neglected the agreement. Now, Iran says for these negotiations to reach a final conclusion, it is necessary for the other side to offer some guarantees that it will remain committed to any agreement that is reached. Gisumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
On Tuesday, Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni unveiled Italy's 2023 draft budget bill during a press conference held at the government building. The package features a $35 billion spending plan and fiscal policies focusing mainly on supporting families, self-employed workers, and those on low incomes.
There are two big priorities: growth, which means safeguarding our production system, and social justice, which means focusing on families and on people on low incomes. This budget is the product of political choices, as is normal for a political government.
About two-thirds of the €35 billion euro budget bill will be allocated to measures aimed at helping struggling families and businesses with the cost of living emergency. Power bills have skyrocketed amid the energy crisis sparked by the Ukraine war. While Italy's annual inflation rate was almost 12% in October, the highest level since March 1984.
Buying food, fuel, paying power bills, it's very difficult. We are struggling to make ends meet, and we expect this government to help us.
The government must ease tax pressure. We can't go on this way anymore. And the war in Ukraine should be stopped. All problems began with the conflict.
A flat tax rate on incomes of up to 85,000 euros for professionals and individual businesses is to be introduced, while the controversial citizenship wage basic income introduced by the Five Star Movement in 2018 is set to be reduced. Also, the pension system will be reformed to allow early retirement. The cabinet also discussed the 2013 Euratom directive, which deals with civilians being exposed to ionizing radiations. Euratom is the European Atomic Energy Community, which was set up in the late 50s to shape Europe's nuclear energy market. The draft budget bill will now be sent to Brussels for approval before it is passed. Max Civili, Rome.
People have gathered to receive winter fuel in form of coal and wood distributed by Iranian embassy in Kabul to warm the cold days of their lives. Najiba and Tahira, who take care of their children all alone, cry out the problems of the cold winter.
I don't have a supporter and my husband has passed away. It's five of us in my family, all of whom are jobless. Currently, we live in a rental house. We could really use such aids and hope it continues, especially in winters.
It is a hard winter, especially for us who don't have the primary needs of our lives. I have small children. I literally don't have anything to warm my home. I work hard to feed my seven family members, but still can't meet our needs.
Almost all who receive relief aids are widows and orphans, most of whom burn plastic, tires, and other waste materials to warm their houses and sometimes cook food. The happiness is noticeable as these widows can provide a warm home for their orphans. The number of these families can reach up to 1,000.
Well, we are prepared to distribute fuel to 1,000 families. The fuel is firewood and coal. We give each family a package of almost 200 kilograms. It isn't much, but it could be enough for almost a month. We are hoping to be able to continue such activities in the coming months also.
With the arrival of winter, concerns about the situation of the people of Afghanistan have intensified. The arrival of winter and warming houses has added to the daily problems of the poor in Afghanistan. Although aid is being provided to some people, there are still many who spend their nights in cold weather. Abdullah Mirzadeh, Kabul.
Four members of an Italian neo-Nazi organization known as the Order of Hagal were arrested on Tuesday in the cities of Naples, Caserta and Avellino, about 200 kilometers south of Rome. At different phases within the process of the investigation, the police collected numerous Nazi and fascist propaganda material, bullets, weapons, tactical clothing and other elements that convinced Italy's judiciary to make charges against members of the Order of Hagal. The police investigation was launched in 2019 when authorities suspected neo-Nazi groups were plotting violent acts in Italy. Today, members of the neo-Nazi organization, the Order of Hagal, have been accused of planning to carry out terrorist attacks on civilian and police targets.
Investigative activity showed that the neo-Nazi organization placed in Italy and Nazi-Ukrainian military groups, such as the Azov Battalion, Misanthropic Division and Centuria, have been in contact to conduct paramilitary training. In fact, diplomas were given for completing the training.
The Azov Battalion is a neo-Nazi paramilitary group that has been incorporated into the Ukrainian National Guard and is currently fighting against Russian troops. The Order of Hagal is an organization based in the area surrounding Naples. Authorities, however, suspect that the group may have subdivisions across Italy. The Order of Hagal has established operational ties to the Azov Battalion. Besides Nazism and anti-Semitism, it promotes subversion and white supremacy culture.
Some of the neo-Nazis' organization's members were trained in Ukrainian camps with the purpose of conducting the military operations in Italy. The group was recruiting among disadvantaged Italians, often young people, people who have a negative, incomplete view of society and can be easily manipulated. The Order of Hagal maintains direct and frequent contacts with its members over Telegram.
An additional member of the neo-Nazi Order of Hagal organization remains wanted by the Italian police, but is currently fighting Russian forces alongside the Azov Battalion. Not long ago, a high-ranking officer from the International Criminal Police Organization, Interpol, warned that the high availability of weapons during the current conflict in Ukraine will result in the proliferation of illicit arms in the post-conflict phase. Max Civili, Rome.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Iran's Team Melli spectacular win over Wales amazed the world, with various media websites elaborating about this game. Iran's national football team have thrashed Wales with two late goals almost at the end of the game. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote, "The Iranian men's football team sang their country's national anthem ahead of their World Cup match against Wales in Qatar, going on to win a thrilling contest thanks to two goals deep into added time. Iran went on to earn a dramatic win against Wales, who were reduced to 10 men in the 86th minute when goalkeeper Wayne Hennessy was sent off for a rash challenge outside the box. Iran capitalized with two late goals, striking first through substitute Ruzbeh Cheshmi with a rasping drive for the edge of the box in the 8th minute of second half stoppage time. Iran capped victory when Ramin Rezaian scored a breakaway goal just 3 minutes later. Middle East Eye also wrote, "Iranian fans have hailed their team's World Cup victory over Wales as a moment of happiness. Carlos Queiroz, Iran's coach, said at the end of the game with Wales, 'I think it was a wonderful day for us. We are back to football and I don't have the words to say thank you to our players.' Paying tribute to his victorious player, Queiroz said, 'They deserve all attention and respect. I think today people understand these boys love to play football. Again, the players deserve to be supported, and we did it for them. That's the only reason we are here, to play for the fans. We are gutted. There is no other way to say it,' said Welsh star Gareth Bale, who was voted the worst player of the game by BBC Sport readers." Also, Al Jazeera English had this title writing, "A spectacular 2-0 Iran win over Wales in stoppage time." Al Jazeera English wrote, "Wales dominated in possession throughout the recent match, and the first half had been a closely contested affair as both sets of fans passionately urged their teams on. Iran eventually emerged as the better team in the second half, pleasing their manager, Carlos Queiroz, who was happy to see some pride in his side after England thrashed them in the opening match." Also, Guardian had an eye on this issue, noting Rob Page struggled to contain his annoyance after saying too many Wales players endured off days in the defeat by Iran that left their chances of progress into the last 16 of their first World Cup for 64 years hanging by a thread. Iran had a first half goal disallowed and twice hit the woodwork before scoring twice in second half stoppage time to earn victory. Wales, who salvaged a late draw against the U.S. recently, again struggled to stamp their authority and had Wayne Hennessy sent off on 86 minutes after he inadvertently wiped out the Iran striker Mehdi Taremi when attempting to clear the ball. Page said he would lift his players, many of whom crashed to the floor at full time before the final Group B match against England. "We can't sit and cry about it," the manager said, adding, "We want to give our supporters something to cheer about. They have shown massive commitment to come over to Qatar, and it really disappoints me that we have given them that. We will bounce back, we will pick them up and go again." Guardian added Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey were among the Wales players who seemed to wilt in the intense afternoon heat before Iran prospered. "We weren't in the game at all," Page said, adding, "even in the first half, before the sending off, you can carry one or two players if they're off days, but when the majority of the team are not quiet at it, there is only going to be one outcome, unfortunately. It's qualifying is out of our hands now." Carlos Queiroz, the Iran head coach, said he was delighted with the way his players responded from their thrashing by England. Queiroz dedicated the victory to Iran fans, many of whom inside the stadium jeered his players singing the national anthem. "It was very emotional, but special," Queiroz said. According to Press TV, Iran's national team have thrashed Wales with two late goals almost at the end of the game. Iran struck twice in the dying moments of added time to earn a 2-0 win over 10-man Wales in their Group B clash at the World Cup recently. Ruzbeh Cheshmi and Ramin Rezaian scored to give Iran a famous win. British media outlets have in recent days grilled several members of the Iranian national football team in an act the players described as a mental game aimed at disheartening the team ahead of 2022 World Cup in Qatar. The Iranian national team, also known as Team Melli, has been under a huge media pressure campaign in recent weeks, especially from London-based Persian outlets, including the Saudi-funded Iran International and Manuto. Prior to the national team's departure to attend the World Cup, the team had been the target of unsuccessful campaigns launched by anti-Iran lobbies around the world, which attempt in vain to have them banned from the event. On social media, countless bots and fake accounts have been harassing Team Melli in recent days, hurling insults and death threats at them while trying to shame them out of playing for their country's national team.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pitch.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. السلام علیکم و رحمت الله و برکاته. Sisters and brothers from all around the world, I hope you're all doing well. This is IRI English Radio and you are listening to my voice from Youth Station. We are youth here supporting youth for a better life. I am Bita, a medical student, and that's my pleasure to be here in this episode.
Assalamu alaikum, this is Muhammad and I am studying Islamic studies here in Qom in Iran.
Assalamu alaikum, my dear brother. So we're going to go for our topic of today, a heartbroken youth. You know, I think the first thing that comes to mind by this actually word is somehow some dramatic relations that when you caught, you will be somehow depressed or something like that. But I think there could be some more reasons for being a heartbroken youth at your age, such as, I don't know, job loss or changing career or changing wherever you live, or I don't know, not achieving whatever you wanted to achieve or something like that. And I think grief or being depressed or, I don't know, being heartbroken is somehow more complicated than what we think.
Oh, yeah,
And actually, I think every single person of us had the same experience, that sometimes we felt somehow heartbroken and depressed, and we felt like, okay, I just want to die here, you know, life is so dark, and some nagging like this. And have you ever experienced this kind of feeling, like being heartbroken or something?
Oh, yes, of course. Everybody does. And it's not specific to this generation. All generations had some form of heartbrokenness. And we, of course, go through different stages in life. At least I can say dealing with parents, dealing with siblings, dealing with teachers, school, and then university.
Dealing with generation gap, I think.
Yeah, it's that's a very important issue that many of us do really face. And it's not about a person being holy or spiritual or submissive to their parents. It's just that it's more of an internal feeling that how a person sad is.
Yeah.
You know, many a times on the outside, I might be happy. I might look satisfied with my life. But in the inside, you'll see there is a world full of depression and sadness. And my heart is broken because of, I don't know, parents maybe financial issues. Many things do really come into play over here. And I think one of the biggest issues the youth really do face these days are love issues. So as soon as you see when they reach to the age of, let's say, 12.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, that's it. That's like explosion of all the feelings. Though you're dependent, but you really want to be independent all the time. You want to show from one side how manly you are, at least from a male's perspective, I can say. And the other side, you can't be because you are always under someone and you have to follow the doctrines given by that person.
Yeah.
Yeah, so heartbroken things is youths with broken hearts. It's a very important issue that really exists in the society.
I do agree with you that unfortunately, I think one of the most important factor that youth with heartbroken youth age is somehow the age of these experiences are somehow lesser than what it should be. And I think this is somehow a bit of a problem for our society. So
yeah.
Let's keep it a cliffhanger and let's go for a break, short break, and then we're going to come back and go on with our controversial topic. And your listeners, stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to Youth Station.
Today we're talking about a heartbroken youth, the age of being in love and somehow lesser than what it should be. So I want your comments on these actually matter and some social problems that it will cause in the society.
Yeah, Sister Bita, let me just first of all say that I'm no expert in giving advice to anybody, but I can say that from my own experience.
Your mindset.
Yeah, with the experience that I have, especially living in the West, the problem that we really face is because of the romantic movies and the media that we are kind of indulged into, the music around us. Though we probably were not listening to it voluntarily, but it's just because it's there and you have to pass through the streets and you listen to this music. These thoughts of being attracted to the opposite sex really takes a great toll in your mind. it might have permanent effects on your brain, like if you have it, like if you listen to it and if you keep seeing it enough. And the problem with Muslim youths in the West is that we are bond with our religious beliefs and commandments, whereas we have to have a few limitations until, for example, let's say we reach the age of marriage. And these limitations, the more we see others, non-Muslims, breaking these limitations, exactly. we get the tendency of breaking it ourselves as well. Now, this becomes really difficult for us because we're seeing that others have the privilege, others who, without the belief, have that privilege, but we ourselves, just because our beliefs, we're kind of confined.
Mm-hmm.
And this really,
this limitation bothers, you know?
Yeah, it bothers us.
And
it's an experience that we all go through, in the West at least. But I think there are ways out of this. There are ways out of this.
I think this is not only limited for Western countries. For the Muslims who live in non-Muslim countries. Yeah. I think this is main problem that we are struggling with in our own country in some Muslim countries that, you know, they are tangled with the Western culture somehow by songs, by videos, whatever, in social media. And this actually affects us and, somehow urges to go through these kind of relationships to just experience it. As you know, we're youth and we just want to experience it, you know. Yeah. It's not enough for me to hear that this is bad for you. I want to do that.
That exploration and that curiosity.
Yeah.
It's natural, I should rather say. It's not a problem where we have to go to a psychiatrist or no.
It could be a problem, actually. It depends on the control that you have to do in your relationships. And you told something. You told me that there are some way out of these problems. So could you please tell me some of your ways, you know, your own special ways? I'm not searching for some, professional things. I'm searching for some your own experience, for example.
Yeah.
You know what?
You see, the thing is, normally, if you look at the trend, the way this love story happens is normally there is this first encounter.
Yeah.
This first encounter normally happens when you're blinded by your emotions. You feel that chemistry that happens between the opposite sex. So I think the best way out of this is not to blind yourself with emotions.
Mm-hmm.
The first instance you see, okay, there is some form of chemistry, because, you know, this is a natural thing. It's not that you see a specific person that happens chemistry. If you ask any youth, you say, okay, do you like this only one person and that person only? Of course, when they're in love, they're going to say, yeah, but then when you look in reality, they're just looking for beauty, or they're looking for some charm, or they're looking for money, whatever it is. They're not looking for the personality generally. Right? So that first instance that you get blinded, you have to pull yourself together and try to get out of that. See exactly whether this thing that is blinding you, what is it really? Like, for example, is it wealth, charm and stuff? See the opposite in that person.
I understand you.
Right? Now, I'm not saying that love is, you know, tabooed.
Yeah, really, no. I know what you mean.
It's a general thing. It's a natural thing. I would personally suggest that if you have the dearness and you have that capacity, why not just get into marriage? You don't have to go to your own house. Let the person, the female can be with her father and the male can be with their family. But then get married. What's the problem?
If
you think that's the person.
At the age of 12, for example, you know, it's somehow, it considers a taboo in our culture.
Exactly. That's my point. That's my point. Now, away from the culture, if you don't have that dearness to marry, you're still in that stage of, I don't know, like, is this person for me or not? Then you know where you are.
Yeah.
You know your stance.
So,
but if you have
that
dearness and you've decided, okay, this is the person, then why not get married? It saves you from a broken heart, because you're now bound to each other. Though you don't have to, you know, marriage is just like, in a sentence, if the two families, they agree, you go ahead with it. Now comes the cultural problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I think is probably the main reason why the youths are scared and sometimes sad, or their hearts are broken because of. Of course, we are bound with families and stuff.
I know that, but I think this is not a good way, actually, to go through the marriage, you know, because you don't want to feel heartbroken, for example, after a cut or something, you will marry someone, but it's not that much, actually, completely true.
That's
exactly
what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If you don't have the dearness, it's just going for it.
No,
go
it's not
it.
About, you know, that much capacity or something. It's about that when you grow older, when you actually go through the society, when you go to university, when you go for a job or something, you will meet some new person, and no matter how much you feel in love,
if you have that dearness and you have that confidence,
yeah,
this is how you test yourself. if nice. You're ready for that, you're down a tunnel towards a broken heart. That's how I eventually saw myself. Like, it's very natural, right? When you're, especially, I grew up in a co-ed school. So there were brothers and sisters both in one class.
Yeah.
And our school, because it was run by Muslims, it was an Islamic school. The principal decided that the brothers and sisters should be separate. So they gave us a different building and so on. And I'm not saying that co-ed school is actually good. Depends on the culture, depends on where you are and what are the other elements that really affect it. But for us, at least, the brothers had a bit of a shyness. Oh, if I say something or do something, that sister is looking at me. They're just your classmate. But then that sister as well, likewise, they'll be like, okay, they're brothers. I have to consider myself. I should be very well attired. I should not say something that would, you know, kind of embarrass me and so on. So that kind of, you know, two-way shyness existed, that you test yourself.
Dear listeners, go for a short break. Stay tuned. As you told me, there could be many ways to avoid this feeling of heartbroken. But sometimes I think this experience should be needed for you, you know. Sometimes you need something bad that will grow you, you know. And for your development, sometimes you have to feel heartbroken. And sometimes this avoiding of being a heartbroken person somehow maybe harms you in the future. So you have to be, you have to find a balanced way of living. Exactly. And I think this is the gist of our episode. What do you think about it?
I wouldn't suggest, like, you know, going towards heartbrokenness, like do something that you will definitely be heartbroken of. No, that's not a right way. It's like, for example, sickness. You know, you would eventually feel sick. You know, you would eventually have fever. You know, you would eventually. But then would you go for it? Would you go find the disease that you want? No, I don't think that's the way to go for it. But yes, of course, if you find yourself heartbroken, I wouldn't say, okay, that's the end of the world. That's actually good for you because you're developing. You're kind of, it's for example, it's a famous saying where you have, for you to achieve success, you have to go through failures. And this is one of the failures. Heartbrokenness is actually a failure. It's an emotional feeling that you have to go through. And personally speaking, going through so many heartbroken things in life, I think I'm a better person now than I was before, even after going through that.
That was really
but
nice
would I
to
still
hear.
Go after heartbrokenness? No,
at all. Yeah, and that was a nice point that you just corrected me that, you know, you shouldn't go for that. But if it happens, you have to accept it with, you know, just open arms. And then there will be always something more interesting for you to go after and something. And you have to always be hopeful about your future, your life and something. Just be just protective about yourself and let it go. Sometimes you have to just let it go.
Yeah.
It's okay to be heartbroken. It's okay to just experience some bad things, or even sometimes making mistakes is something necessary for your life. Just take it easy and be thoughtful. Just, I think, thinking about whatever you did up to here is enough to find the right way. Thank
Definitely.
You for being here with me, my dear brother. And
it's a pleasure, Miss Pita.
Yeah, that's my honor too. And thank you for listening to me in this episode. I hope you enjoyed all of this. This is all the time we had for today's episode. So I bid you farewell and I leave you in the warm embrace of Allah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator, my Alpha and Omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you, I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker, abiding in silence with patience and guidance. Aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.